FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 6618. And, well, as always, make my day. Send an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. And what's the future of electric cars and the company currently known as Tesla? Who knows what it might be known as in the future? And what about those dumb phones? Well, they're smartphones that make you dumb. What should you be doing with them? Well, with us, our good friend and podcast host in her own right, Danielle Park. Danielle, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, Kerry.
So what about, first, let's talk about these phones. You know, they've come to dominate your life. They've come to totally rule so many of you out there. You know, I saw a survey that said the average person touches their screen on their phone 2,600 times per day. That's a little more than just using the thing to get to a location or play some music or watch a YouTube. This is a dominance within your cerebral cortex, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the research shows that they've actually developed these products and applications specifically tailored to trigger those endorphins in the human brain and elicit a compulsive reaction. So it's an addictive sort of hook, and it's worked. And you can tell because the whole world's walking around with their head down, whether they're driving, whether they're walking, whether they're looking at their kids sitting at the dinner table. It's obsessive. It's crazy. And, you know, I have good personal discipline, but I also have a job that even when I'm out of the office, follows me. You know, even if I'm on a supposed vacation, it follows me. So really, day in, day out, I was thinking about how it was about 2007 when I got my first BlackBerry. And so, you know, we're talking about just in the last decade, we've gone from having a phone, which basically we used to make calls or to get calls. And remember, you know, I would say, would it be 25 years ago? I had my first bag phone in the car, you know, and you thought it was so cool. Yeah. And it was that big heavy bag thing with the cord. It looked like the black phones from the 1970s, only it was on this portable bag. So that's where it started. And then 10 years later, we went from the large clunky down to the handheld processing units. Mm-hmm. And I think the pendulum's swinging back. My own take is that it's become extremely unhealthy psychologically and physically, because people are, you know, having accidents of all kinds, not just on the road, but, you know, not paying attention where they're walking, not watching their children at swimming pools, not, you know, just not being aware. And if you think about the irony, Kerry, of everything we've learned from the self-help movement over the past, you know, 15 years is all about awareness, being in the presence, mindfulness, you know, all that. And that is really the antithesis of what a smartphone is, isn't it? It really just constantly pulls us away to information elsewhere. And much of that is completely useless to us. Like, really, we are passive reviewers of information that flashes before our eyes, and much of it really has no impact on us, or has an impact in a negative way, has no real function for us. So it does elicit increased anxiety. And we are all suffering from a great deal of anxiety in the modern society. That's been documented well. The rise of suicidal tendencies is documented throughout. So I think there's a connection here. And myself, I've just decided that when my current phone is ready for replacement, I am going to try and go backwards. I'm going to try and have a phone that only acts as a phone and a text and does not have browsing capacity. So obviously I'm still tied to my laptop everywhere that I go, but at least when I'm out away from the laptop, I won't still be, you know, tethered so much.
Well, maybe you'll get yourself a tablet.
That wouldn't serve a purpose, though, would it, Carrie?
Well, at least it's not a smartphone. No, but I'm being a little facetious there, because all a tablet is a smartphone on steroids that doesn't have a telephone capability. Look, I know what you're trying to do, and I love to be able to do it with you, but I'm not regressing to a flip phone. It's like, it just doesn't comport with the modern life. You know, that's kind of like, while you're at it, you might as well go off the grid, you know, find a nice log cabin somewhere in the Canadian Rockies that doesn't have electricity or a phone, and, you know, go catch your food or pick your food. It's kind of atavistic, and it's really hard to do it too. And the other thing is, the damn things are so useful in so many ways that maybe it just requires internal discipline that we all have, but never exercise.
Well, it could be. And, you know, cognitive dissonance allows you to, you know, it's possible for me to acknowledge that a smartphone does incredible things and makes human life more efficient in many ways. And it's also leading to a degradation in the quality of life in many ways. So both things can be true, you know. So I just think that and here's the thing. Everything that we have in our present, we always seem to feel like it's been always this way. And if you break it down or think back, you go, no, wait, it wasn't always this way. What did we do, you know, 10 years ago? What did we do 20 years ago? And what will we do 10 years from now? And I think to think that the current mass where everyone's distracted and sort of anxious is not a sustainable trend either. So I think that, like, I believe in these pendulum swings. We started from, you know, far left, we've gone to the far right, and I think somewhere in the middle is where we'll end up.
Well, you could be right. And yes, putting limits on your technological intake, really important, really important. So few of you out there actually read books now the way that you used to. But let's go to another technological potential wave, but certainly an emerging trend at the very least, and that is the electric vehicle, the EV as it's known. Hey, I will confess that when I was in California recently, I rented a Ford Fusion Hybrid, and they've almost got it to the point where it's as good as a regular car. You don't feel the engine kicking out and battery kicking in. You know, you're oblivious to that. It's neutral, which is really a major step. The thing got like 40 miles to the gallon, which for current vehicles, not too shabby for a so-called full-size vehicle. But when we look at Tesla, its long-term viability very much in question. And you raised an interesting point when we were discussing it, that just because you like a company's products and its technology does not mean that it's a suitable investment for all but a very specialized few.
Well, because valuations matter in every single investment area that we look at to part with our capital. It's not a question of whether a company has earnings, whether a company has revenue, whether a company has growth. It's a question of how many multiples of that you're paying for now, and, you know, how likely that is to pay you back over time. And so if you're paying a massive multiple, which, you know, Tesla stock has been trading at a massive multiple for a long time, it doesn't mean that it's going to be a rewarding investment necessarily. And if it is, perhaps it's over a very long-term window. But, you know, I there's absolutely a ton of risk in what he's doing. And for that, I admire him greatly, actually, because he has really, you know, confronted great obstacles and incessant naysaying and people, you know, laughing and making a mockery of the progressive ideas. And the reality is, Carrie, you're talking about the car, George, that the hybrid that you drove in California. You also told me about the Tesla that you drove in with your friend. I think it was in Florida a couple of years ago. And never mind almost getting to good enough, the Tesla has, you know, the sedan was ranked the top car of all time. And it's far past See, this is my point. The main car makers have been an embarrassment for decades. They have been subject to constant bailouts from governments. They have been antiquated technology. They change colors and flashing lights and call that innovation when, you know, other than airbags and seatbelts, which we've had for a long time, anti-locking brakes, basically the engine has stayed the same. And they were long time, opposing this evolution, as we know, who killed the electric car. They broke up the EV1s and GM and all that. I mean, that was 15 years ago. And then you have, the Dieselgate scandal. I just got my notice of a class action lawsuit for our vehicle, who is now being sued for rigging and scamming. And that was absolutely why we bought the vehicle 10 years ago, was because it had this clean tech diesel technology and was supposed to be one of the cleanest available on the road and all that. Right. Turns out, they put cheaters in it. So I have lost any respect for the mainstream automakers. I don't see them well managed. I don't see them innovative. I don't see them financially viable in the long run, unless they evolve and get a lot more smart in not just talking about goosing up their share prices, but actually creating products that will be, in demand for the long term. And so it's a very capital intensive business, whether it's GM, whether it's Tesla, whoever's doing it, it's huge amount of upfront investment. And they have to produce a lot of product to sustain the cash flows for all that. So it's a high risk business. It's not something I'm investing in, but I do think that Tesla has embarrassed and cajoled and led this antiquated model of the old car makers into the future. And every day they're rolling out their new types or their new announcements or their new pledge to get off of, to end gas ICE production vehicles. So I think this trend is here to stay. And I don't know who's going to be the leader 10 years from now. I don't think anybody does, because there's that much risk in it.
Yeah. And I totally agree with you. The current model of the big auto manufacturers, totally obsolete. And, the current model revolves around the model year. Every year there's a new model, so you have an excuse to get rid of a perfectly good car because, this one's got adaptive cruise control, whatever it has. And they've innovated, but innovated along a very controlled thing. They really became oligopolies, kind of dominated by government regulations.
Driven by their finance arm. Yeah. Let's not forget the main reason that people consume and change vehicles is precisely to do with financing arrangements, not to do with whether the vehicle needs upgrading or has anything that, is fundamentally improved in the next model. It's really all about the term of the loan or lease that they took out. And, it aspires to our monkey brain. We didn't have anything down. We just got this car. We drove it around. And, now we can get a new shiny one, again, with nothing down. So, it tends to prey on our weaker self.
Yeah. The whole auto is just a very mature, barely progressing industry. And totally, most of their profits were from their finance arms, like Ford Motor, Chrysler, when that was an independent company, GM before it went belly up, all of them, and the Europeans as well, Audi, yeah. Financial, whatever. So, but point
BMW
is,
BMW keeps issuing, its next series of the exact same car. Where it was a series 8 down to series 2 or something. And it's like, let me guess the next one. And they just made them smaller and cheaper to try and get more and more customers. But, that really has been the model for the last decade. And what it's done is brought forward future consumption, spent it all in the present, and left all these big cratering holes ahead for most business models. And that is going to be the challenge to navigate. Why can they not afford to, have lower sales? Because most of them are up to their eyeballs in debt already from the securitization mania that swept through. Okay. So, even if rates don't quickly rise, even if rates stay low, the fact is people are up to their eyeballs, corporations are up to their eyeballs in debt. And that means they need cash flow to keep moving just to sustain what they've got. Never mind invest.
Yeah, and Tesla is no exception to that as far as being up to its eyeballs in debt And we'll have to see, because right now they wanted to do 10,000 of these Model 3s a week. I think they're up to 2,000 now, evidently. Large-scale manufacturing, even though these car companies are antiquated entities, is something that they're actually pretty good at. And the other thing I'd like to point out is, even though maybe the technology, the model hasn't changed, the lifespan of their products, you used to get 100,000 miles, and now you get 250,000 and up. So the quality of their products has gone way up in terms of longevity and all that. In terms of their marketing, getting you to get rid of them long before their useful life is over, different story. But Tesla, you know, vastly, crazily overvalued unless they actually deliver. And
And let's not forget another part of their business is the whole power packs that they're doing. And they have, like, the statistic was, you know, I was putting it on the blog this week, has they've installed worldwide half of the entire amount of energy storage since 2015 that is in the world today. So in just less than 3 years, they've installed enough of these, you know, batteries that are powering. I mean, talk to Puerto Rico about how, or talk to Australia. A lot of these countries are putting in massive installations of Tesla power packs, and they're having, you know, solar panels that absorb energy, put it to the packs, feed it back to the grid, feed the cars. I mean, this is all here now. This is not hypothetical.
Yeah, certainly. But can they make any money on it, Danielle? Will they make any money on it? Is it possible at this point? You know, the graveyards, corporate graveyards littered with all of these innovative companies that that thought they could change the world. I just remember the Bomar brain, you know, the watch, the first electronic watch, the calculator companies, all these innovators, early stage innovators. There's not that many of them around to celebrate at this point. And, you know, the question is, can Tesla make that jump? Can they go?
And we'll see. And we'll see. But, you know, I do think that here's a difference. We started talking about the smartphone and how the last decade has been the evolution of the tablet and social media and our ability to do things from our hand rather than having to go to a bank or go to a store. And there's certain efficiency gain that's come with that, but there's a limited amount of efficiency gain that's come with that, because what ultimately it does is reduce people to distracted minds that often accomplish less in terms of substantive thinking and productivity. And we've seen that productivity has been declining, Carrie, for the past number of years. So I think that we may have hit the tipping point where now all that stuff in our hand and distraction is counterproductive rather than productive. And the other thing is that we have, as we've said, so much debt. So now innovation is not going to be just who can come up with the next flashing application. Innovation that's going to be consumed or sustained in this new economy is going to have to be one that truly improves efficiency. That means causes people to spend less and gain more. And that's the only way we're going to be able to really increase our consumption ability, because we aren't getting huge wage gains, as you know.
Sure.
Globalization is really that. AI has taken a chunk of jobs and continues to do so. McDonald's is putting in kiosks. You know, it's every day coming. So wage gains are going to be hard to get. Debt levels are already at the roof. And so what we have to do is figure out how people can exist with lower expenses. And I think that's where the businesses of the next decade, I think, are be the ones that help increase efficiency and cash flow, even if incomes don't rise. And I think that's where the focus of, that's why I think companies like Tesla are more on the right track than companies that produce meaningless consumer goods or, you know, health devastating food supply or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see. They might be on the right track, but they might be taking the wrong route to get there. And that could be their downfall for sure. Because like I say, you know, the corporate graveyard is littered with companies that had a better mousetrap and sold it. But eventually, for various reasons, they couldn't make it on their own. And, you know, Tesla's getting to that really crucial fork in the road, whether they're going to become just the generator of all these different technologies that get adopted by everyone else, or whether they'll remain the master. One thing I do think is interesting and could be an indicator of the future is, even after all these years they've been doing this car, I think it's 5 years since the S came out, there's really no major competitors. Yes, you will see a lot of high-end supercars that have phenomenal electric capabilities, but there is no direct competitor to the Tesla yet. There are hybrids galore that nobody seems to want, and there are a few fringe electric vehicles from the BMWs, Mercedes of the world, but nobody's come out with a direct competitor to either the Model S, X, or 3, only electric. So there must be a reason why, and it isn't just because the market's so small, even though the market is very tiny at this particular moment in time. So the fact that they haven't come out with it yet is an indicator. You have GM with the Bolt. It's kind of a tiny little car that's fully electric. That's kind of a direct competitor, but at the very, very low end of the Model 3. And that's kind of it. There's the Leaf, which is a piece of garbage in my estimation. You really don't have a lot of competitors in that space, and they've had a lot of time to do it, Danielle.
Yeah, well, and Tesla's got a hell of a head start, so we'll see. You know, one of the things that worries me about businesses in general today is the amount of leverage in the system, because when the financial bubbles burst, as they did in 2008, you know, Tesla was nascent 10 years earlier than now, and they had a lot of financial difficulty when the stock market tumbled and corporate debt gets tanks and everything, liquidity dries up. So these companies, but it's not just Tesla that's facing that. A lot of companies are going to be in a world of hurt when financial liquidity recedes. And it has been already starting in the emerging markets, developing markets, where US dollar spiking over the past, you know, year has really brought to bear a great deal of financial strife because they've borrowed so much in US dollars. So it's really a pandemic of debt worldwide right now. And that means that everyone is ill prepared for the pullback phase. And we're going to have a lot of financial shakeups and fallouts through that process. And, you know, interesting, Nikola Tesla, there's a great new documentary on Netflix right now that I caught the other night on the namesake of Tesla, the company, Nikola Tesla, the Serbian-American inventor. You know, he was an electrical engineer. He invented alternating current, which was his main invention. But he also had great ideas, and that's why Elon Musk took the name Tesla for the company, but great technology and innovation in the area of energy, free energy, passively collected energy, lowering living costs for the masses. That was really a huge part of his vision. And he was not financially successful over time. And that impinged his ability to bring out some of these really incredible ideas and experiments that he proved. But, you know, someone like Thomas Edison was a much more able business person and also an innovator, of course. But so, of course, you know, you say there's a difference between the product and the investment, which I always agree with. There's also a difference between the fantastic ideas, which may indeed be all in the right direction, and financial sustainability. And that's where we all have to deal with, you know, managing cash flow and keeping our leverage feasible so that we aren't wiped out every time the economy takes a downturn.
Yeah, that was a great segue, Danielle. You know, sometimes you amaze me. you tied it all together, brought it all back, and you're 100% right. The lesson is there for all of you who want to learn it. And it's always better to learn a lesson that somebody else has had to learn themselves, rather than you having to receive direct instruction and experience. As my father used to say, anytime you start a new business, you pay for lessons. Well, every investment cycle, the lessons are purchased, often at an extremely high price. And this one, no doubt, will be exactly the same as all the others, Danielle. So check out Danielle's work, jugglingdynamite.com. Go to Financial Survival Network. Hey, send us an email. Love to get your feedback on this or any other show that you might have heard. It's kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page Financial Survival Network. Danielle, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.